Drugs and the people who use them are in the news all the time. By many accounts, we're in a drug epidemic. This time, the objects of abuse are opioid prescription painkillers and the less regulated drugs that people use to replace them. When people seek treatment for their drug addictions, their first impulse may be to turn to primary care, the family doctor or the equivalent. But primary care providers could use some more support to handle addiction treatment. That's the case made by an associate professor at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University. Dr. Jessica Gregg wrote an essay for a recent issue of a medical journal pointing out how primary care physicians are often overwhelmed. Dr. Gregg is the medical director of the OHSU ECHO, Extension for Community Healthcare Outcomes Clinic for Addiction Medicine, and associate program director for OHSU's Addiction Medicine Fellowship, so well-versed in addiction treatment matters. Dr. Gregg, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Since you do work in a medical school, I'm just curious about how much of a topic, for example, opioid addiction and treatment is in the training of new physicians in general and specifically now.
In general, it's minimal. I got none as a medical student, and I think I got almost none as a resident, so post-medical school. Currently at OHSU, certainly there are efforts to increase that. I've given lectures to the medical students. We have residents rotate through with us when we see patients with addictions. But it's still, in terms of proportionality, it's a pretty minor topic, particularly given that it's drug overdose is now the leading cause of death for adults under 50.
Wow, under 50, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, and how long has it been that way?
I mean, it's rapidly escalating. I would say, and in fact, I think it's now the leading cause of death for adults under 55 within the last few months. So it's been that way, I think, at least for the last year, and it's worsening.
Wow. So, the point you're making in this essay, the promises and pitfalls of treating addiction, is that essentially you do think people should go to primary care physicians, but the primary care physicians aren't terribly well equipped, it sounds like, to handle the load.
Right. And it's not just that physicians aren't trained in addiction. It's also that there's a lot that goes on when someone is dealing with addiction, and often by the time they get to treatment, there's been a lot of fallout in their lives. So there's more than just the medication, which is incredibly important. We have medications now that can cut mortality in half, at least, from opioid use disorder. It's a huge deal. But that's just the start. I mean, it's an incredibly important start. Keep people alive. But then there are the next steps. What about their mental health? What about family disarray? What about homelessness? And that's a lot to put on a primary care provider's plate in 15 minutes.
And is that still the general standard, that a primary care physician is going to see a patient for all of about 15 minutes?
That is generally the standard, yeah.
Wow. First, let's talk about the problem before we get to the solution. So how did we get here? I mean, Wow.
How did this happen?
So many questions. Yeah, really. How did this happen? Yeah.
I think a lot of different things happened. One, we had physicians prescribing opioids in remarkable quantities in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I know in my training, I was certainly taught that if a patient told me they were in pain and I gave them an opioid, it was not addicting. So
it was not addicting, or you were just told it was not addicting?
I was told it was not addicting. That was incorrect.
Wow.
But that was our training. So there was that. We were also told that we were under-treating pain. So we were told we were under-treating pain and told that if we treated it correctly, the opioids would not be addicting. And then people just went crazy. You know, we prescribed just remarkably. And then the other thing that happened is primary care was tasked with the treatment of chronic pain, which is another really complicated condition. And again, given very few resources, very little time, and very little training. And so we're left basically with one tool, which was an opioid. So that's one part, is doctors. Mm-hmm. Doctors prescribed a lot. Another part is a lack of connection in the world. I mean, we're increasingly isolated with our computers and without our communities. And there's people have termed many of these drug overdoses deaths of despair. So as employment has gotten worse in certain areas of the country, or people don't see options out of poverty, drug use is often appealing as a way to escape. And when there aren't communities around, built-in communities to help support people through difficult times, again, a drug using is a handy crutch.
We're talking to Dr. Jessica Gregg at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University, where she's an associate professor of medicine and the medical director for the OHSU ECHO, Extension for Community Healthcare Outcomes Clinic for Addiction Medicine. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about primary care physicians and opioid abuse, drug abuse generally. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it sounds like, from what you're saying, Dr. Gregg, is the situation that got us into opioids in the first place is also making it difficult for us to get out of them. And in both cases, it's that primary care physicians just didn't have a lot of time and attention to spend with patients.
Yeah, and support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, as a primary care physician, my skill set, I have a great skill set, but it's not everything. And often a counselor is much more able to address the problems that some of my patients have, or a peer, someone who's been through, whether it's addiction or pain or whatever the condition is, someone who can really meet the patient where they are and say, you know, I get it. And let me sit here with you, and let me go with you to this meeting, or go with you to the food bank, or the needle exchange, or whatever it is that this person needs. I get it, and I'm with you.
So what they need is not necessarily a medical thing, but somebody more personal.
Right. From the doctor, they really need this medication that will save their lives. But once that happens, they need so much more that doctors often aren't the best people to deliver.
Your essay includes a case history of a patient you called Jay. Can you kind of walk us through his experience with seeking treatment and where he ended up getting it?
Yeah, I saw him actually at a clinic in town here in Portland that partnered with primary care. So we would get people started on medication for substance use disorders, for opioid use disorders primarily, get them stabilized, and then transition them to their primary care physician in partnership with the primary care physician. And so how that worked is it offloaded sort of the crisis time from the primary care physician, and we were able to spend time with our patients as they had relapses, as they struggled, as they were ambivalent, as they needed help with their parole officers and children and et cetera. We had all the time there to help sort through that and figure out, even was the medication and treatment we were providing the appropriate medication and treatment? Because sometimes people need more or less, or it takes some time to sort that out. And so with Jay, who was just this lovely kid, young adult, he struggled with a belligerent dad. He struggled with homelessness on and off. He struggled with difficulties with employment. He struggled with methamphetamines and opioids. And we were able to sort of sit with him through that because as the physician, I had support. I could provide him the medication. And then I had a peer who would go with him to his court dates. And we had a counselor who would help talk him through, you know, other ways to deal with stressors. And it helped him, and it also made taking care of him a joy for me because I knew I was really providing good care because I had this team.
So is that the key, you think? Is that the beginning of the solution, is to make sure that all primary care physicians that are going to be taking in patients who are asking for help with addiction treatment have somebody else as a resource to turn to?
Yes, I think so. I think that it's not fair to ask most primary care physicians to just do this by themselves. And I say that with great hesitation because these medications are life-saving. They're so important. And it kills me that we don't provide them more easily. So it took me a long time to write this essay because I was of two minds. On the one hand, I just want to say, like, just prescribe it. Just, who cares? You know, just get people on these medications so they don't die. But my fear is that if we say that to primary care, and then they're tasked, they do that, and then they have these patients who are struggling and have so many other problems and who really can make clinic life chaotic, primary care will ultimately opt out altogether. They'll just say it's too much. And then we'll be actually in a worse position than we are now.
So people go to emergency rooms and seek treatment there, that sort of thing?
Yeah, or just die.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jessica Gregg, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an associate professor in the medical school at the OHSU School of Medicine, and also has extensive experience in addiction medicine. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jacob and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi. I wanted to propose a counterintuitive solution that could save lives starting right away tonight, and it costs nothing, and it could be implemented at thousands of sites nationwide. It has to do with the acute overdose situation. And the worst case for an addict who's going to be injecting tonight, and they know they're going to be injecting tonight, is to be alone in their bedroom, locked up, you know, in their house. Okay. My proposal is to have them come to a place that's warm, in the public, and that has easy access to overdose medication and medical personnel, and make it easy for the emergency personnel to respond. And what I would say is every hospital has an emergency room, and every emergency room has a waiting room, and there's, you know, dozens of people that are waiting to get lacerations or whatever, the flu. Go in there. It's a public place, and you're allowed to go in there and sit and inject yourself, because it'll be witnessed. The worst case is you have a nice high and you just walk home, you get in your car and drive home. The worst case scenario is you go into overdose and have cardiac arrest, and the hospital and emergency room has the personnel to respond to that.
All right.
Now,
let's give this
hospitals don't want you to get high in their waiting rooms, but
yeah,
you know, unfortunately, that's probably the best place anywhere to get overdosed.
All right. Thanks for that, Jacob. Appreciate it. Jessica Gregg, I can imagine the hospitals would have some reservations about that, but is he on a right track here?
I think he is. There is a movement in the United States, a movement that's gaining some traction around supervised injection facilities, which is kind of what he's talking about. They're not necessarily in the ER, but they are facilities where basically people can come and get clean needles, so reduce the risk of HIV and hepatitis C and other infections. And you don't even really need doctors, but you do need people who, if someone takes too much, can reverse the overdose, which is actually super duper easy. You know, naloxone is a medication that will do that. And those have really good evidence behind them. And not only in terms of saving lives, but also people can go to supervised injection facilities and be cared for and engage with people who say, you know, how's this working for you? We're here for you if this is what you want. And if you want to do something different, we're here to help you with that too. So it's really that idea of meeting people where they are, making sure they're as safe as they can be at that moment, and then incrementally helping them on to the next step.
And Dr. Gregg, when you talk about the meds that can help save lives, are we talking about the alternatives that can you know, deal with the addiction but not give the high?
Yeah. So there are three main medications for opioid use disorder. One is methadone, which is only available through methadone clinics.
Mm-hmm.
So a primary care provider cannot prescribe that for addiction. The other is buprenorphine, which is also called Suboxone or Subutex, which in general, for most people, will take away cravings and withdrawal without giving them much of a euphoric effect. And then the last is an injection called naltrexone, extended-release naltrexone, that actually blocks opioids. So if somebody wants to use them, they get no effect at all.
And you mentioned already that methadone isn't available. So are you advocating making methadone available for primary care or just making the other two more used?
So to start, the other two need to be more used, 100%. It's an interesting question, whether methadone should be deregulated. It's tightly federally regulated right now, which is why you can only get it at a methadone clinic. Mm-hmm. Personally, I do think it should not be so tightly regulated. I think it's a huge barrier. But that's a much bigger ask. There's a whole federal apparatus around that. But in terms of buprenorphine and extended-release naltrexone, that's a smaller ask and much more doable.
And about the other parts, though, I mean, getting primary care doctors and more connected to resources, mm-hmm. Where would that start?
Oh, that's a great question. So the current administration has declared the opioid crisis a public health emergency, and it has a commission that released a really wonderful report on addressing the opioid crisis. But neither the report nor this declaration of an emergency are really come with any resources. And so while I appreciate the spotlight, it needs more than a spotlight. Like, we know it's a problem. What really needs to have happen now is resources so that different models can be implemented, so that the treatment of addiction isn't just, the patient comes in, pays the doctor does the service, and the patient goes. If you're going to have a team, you need to be able to compensate for that team, because counselors and peers don't really bill in primary care. So when we provide that, we are swallowing the costs there, and eventually clinics say we can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So there need to be different ways of payment.
All right, so lots of work ahead to make some substances available and some procedures and some money available as well. Dr. Jessica Griggs' essay is called The Promises and Pitfalls of Treating Addiction in the December issue of Health Affairs. She is an associate professor of medicine at OHSU and has a couple of other titles there. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Jessica Griggs.